Luka Nation, quick hitter. We have an incredible week on deck for you guys. We're going to be doing a live show from Mint this Friday evening, so stay tuned. We're going to get you guys a list of guests that we'll have on. Welcome back to Lucas Tigers and Bronzo Mai, episode 952. Shout out to Cage. Shout out to our audience. Cage, I was listening. A lesson to be learned, okay?
We live
in such a react culture that we don't allow time, space, and facts to come out when it comes to scandals, drama. And you know this all too well. You made a post about a downtown card that was taken during a break. Yep. I got to give a shout out and kudos. I was just listening to Sports Card Nonsense before we just hopped on, who had the owner of the breaking company. And I think it's like a 5-6 person shop. So it's not like they have 100 breakers, but it's not like it's just one breaker. And I urge you guys, if you followed Cage's post, if you've seen all the posts out there about the Retail King breaks and the downtown card, go listen to Sports Card Nonsense. It's actually right in the beginning of yesterday's episode. So the first like 20 minutes, and you'll get a little bit of better understanding of what happened.
Just went live today. It's on this story.
Tuesday episode, Cage.
Oh, my bad. A little yesterday episode. Yeah, they posted in their story. That's what it was. So I assumed it was today. Kudos to their producer, whoever it was that said, you know what? Cage's post is on fire. Let's call them up and get them on and actually talk to them and get the story. I mean, whoever, Jesse, if that's you, nice job. Nice job, Jesse. Because we know it wasn't Mike.
I got to tell you, man, this is an interesting industry where common sense isn't so common. So this isn't necessarily like,
true.
If a casino hires a blackjack dealer and he's dealing from the bottom, right?
Yep.
Well, they revoke his license and that guy can't work for, or girl can't work for a certain period of time or ever. And now you have stake in the game. In this industry, the biggest breakers should demand licensing for their employees, because then you don't have someone that's hired off the street and a week later is breaking. You have to pass a test. You have to go through training. You have to have stake in the game, meaning if you want to risk your life for 150 or 200 or 400 bucks, that's because they have nothing to lose. If they could, if they knew they couldn't break, they would never make these decisions. So it's, we call this a hobby, but what we have is two different camps. We have some people who love this and they truly believe it's a hobby and they don't want to change. Yep. But then you have all these people who want to come in and make profit and all that stuff. If you want to make profit, you better regulate it. You better create some guardrails. You better create some incentives so people don't do this stuff. And it's a really interesting fork in the road for the hobby these next, until Fanatics comes over. And I'll add one more thing to it. We have two more camps. And those two camps, Cage, are
summer camp.
We pander to Fanatics. Maybe Fanatics will open up their checkbook and sign us, bring us under the wing. And the other saying, you know, Fanatics doesn't even realize overprinting, shitty supply. It's a fascinating fork in the road. Time and hobby.
They don't know. I got the PMGs. They don't know. I mean, listen, common sense is not that common. What's amazing is every class of hobby participant you just named, it's fine that they are the way they are. And that's what makes this a great hobby. Seriously.
Define fine. Let's go down this road. Define fine.
They don't have to change. And no one should tell them that they should. If you're a collector and you want to just collect your cards the way you do, and you want to shout that, you know, the new kids that came into the hobby and are breakers and, you know, they're basically just gamblers and that's not sustainable and that's BS and that's not the hobby and it's not good long term, you're allowed to yell that. You're allowed to say that. It's your prerogative. You've been here. You hobby the way you want to. And if you just look at the stuff that I post, you'll see those comments in there. And guess what? The hobby is not the same if we try to throw those guys out and tell them that they're dinosaurs and tell them they're going to die soon and that they should go stick to their binders. The same way
were before the breakers. Breakers is a relatively new thing. So what I think that the people who've been around for a while are like, these guys are making all of us look bad. And this should be done more professionally if you're going to go and do this.
Yeah, but that is the way of the world, right? You know, it is people who liked library books didn't trust the internet for research, right? People who wanted to gamble, they gambled at casinos, and then online gambling came. And the people who only gambled in the I'm not gonna play on my phone. I'm not gonna play on a computer. There's no dealer there. And then people who liked taxi cabs didn't want to use Uber. Breaking is simply disruption, right? Not everybody has. I mean, sort of. Sure, I understand what you're saying about regulation. I think markets usually find a way after enough time to sort themselves out and regulate themselves, whether it's from internal or external. But two different issues there. You're saying that these guys are saying, oh, breaking is new and I was here before them. Okay, well, when has that ever worked?
There needs to be trust in the system, right? And one industry that you didn't touch on, like think about how you used to bet on games. You go to a bookie and you would put a bet in, and if you lost, he could break your legs if you didn't pay. It was the Wild Wild West. Then you went to state-sponsored books where you had to have money. You came in. It was regulated. It was done in a professional manner. And that's an industry that became safer through regulation. So, yes, markets will take care of themselves. And I'm not a big fan of oversight, but I think it's on either the community or someone externally to come in and create that protection for the industry. Or else just the Wild Wild West.
It didn't go from Vito the leg breaker to every state with legalized gambling overnight.
Correct.
Do you remember the fleshy middle that was there where you had
Jersey and Vegas?
No, where you had Bovada and Five Dimes and all the other players only, and Bodog before Bovada, and I mean a million other online, offshore. And some of them went under, and some of them were not the most secure. And there was some sort of regulation out of Curacao, and it wasn't really, being regulated. Right?
Are you in remission? Were you a former gambler on these sites?
I gamble like crazy, man. Of course, I gamble all. I mean,
you even know the fine print. You even know where their banking stuff.
Some of them, I mean, it depends. Some of them different islands, right?
There's so much knowledge in that huge ass dome.
When there's money, everything follows the money, then the regulation will follow the money. And unfortunately, I didn't listen to Sports Card Nonsense yet. I'm sure will, because I'm curious to hear what kind of questioning they did and what kind of answer they have. I'm sure it's the same, scenario, which is I got people working for me. This guy is, one bad apple doesn't mean, it ruins the whole bunch, and, don't punish the whole system for one bad actor. And I'm sure it's that type of stuff. And it's probably accurate. Those things happening will advance the ball. Right. And it could just be internal, and let this go for a second. You ready? If before we get to legalize gambling in every state of the union, right, there are 5 or 8 or 15 offshore betting sites, right? And you want to bet and I want to bet and all of our friends in the betting community are talking in message boards or whatever it is. And it turns out
that exists right now in the breaking community too, by the way.
Correct. That's why I'm saying it, right? And what happens is if somebody gets burnt, it will police itself. You know what I mean? It will police itself. And if it doesn't, it'll have to get better in policing. Just like the scammer pages on trading for the hobby, you name it, the whole deal. That's what's going to happen. Eventually, it'll all be regulated. There'll be licensing. There'll be all that stuff. That doesn't happen overnight. It has to go through some of the growing pains.
If I'm one of these big breakers, I come together with the five families. And I create a coalition that says, we're going to license breakers. We're going to work with Fanatics and say, we are only going to hire Fanatics licensed and approved breakers.
And what does that do for Panini?
You know how I think about Panini.
Panini, but what does it do for Panini?
It's last legs.
Oh, they're not.
Panini is on their last legs, in my opinion.
All right. Well, it's a good thing. And your opinion doesn't really matter too much.
That's sort of irrelevant to this conversation because you could do the same thing with
Panini. That's a total monopoly, what you're talking about. Because now you're saying the breakers and Fanatics should get together and come up with just I'm only going to break Fanatics. Fanatics is only going to break with these people. Why?
I'm only going to hire people that are Fanatics approved to open your product.
Okay, so let's take
when we open your product, it's going to be a professional manner. And now Fanatics controls the entire
sales
cycle.
So they get to touch Fanatics. Go ahead. The other five podcasts out there besides us go to Fanatics tomorrow and say, "Hey, Fanatics, we only want you to work with reputable podcasts."
We're not.
And Fanatics turns around and says, "Hey, Andrew, you're not reputable. The takes you have are stupid. People don't listen to what you say. People think you're dumb. We are not going to allow
roasted
to podcast anymore. You're not going to be a Fanatics branded licensed podcast, right? Is that fair?" And now the hobby community knows that there are six podcasts out there and only five of them have the Fanatics stamp of approval on them. Only five of them should be listened to by everybody else. The sixth is just poor Andrew, who Fanatics just doesn't like and doesn't want to work with. But whatever the reason is, allow you decided that people should go to Fanatics. Fanatics says, boom, done. But they don't like
twofold.
You. So what happens?
Twofold. Hook 'em horns. First off, we're not accepting anybody's money. So we're not responsible. That's a huge, huge thing. We're not accepting any customer money. So we're not responsible for anything. Okay? Let me rephrase. We're not responsible for the execution difference without of the distinction. Product.
The point being, Fanatics gets to choose.
Second, it's not that Fanatics says these are the only legit ones and these aren't. These are the standards that you have to keep within your organization. And if you meet these standards, you become Fanatics approved. You create a set of standards of how you open, process, and talk about cards. And if you meet those standards,
a pretty slippery slope.
How?
Because you're leaving it up to one entity to come up with everything,
dude. It's like the entire U.S. legal system is based on precedent. You don't even have to make anything up. We've already seen it in gambling. Just follow the blackjack model.
What?
Follow the blackjack model. You have licensed blackjack dealers. It's the same model.
Who are they licensed by? Is there one licensing party? No, every state has their own gaming commission with different rules and different laws.
That's fine. We're talking about semantics versus
the I think it's not semantics. I think it is a very important thing that you're talking about, because basically what you're saying is in Andrew's world, let Fanatics make all the rules going forward. Fanatics is going to say who can break my product. Like it may get there anyway, and I may be pissing into a wind that's going to knock it right back into my face.
I hope so. I wish it happened more.
I hope it doesn't. And I think it's important to talk. This is not me saying your idea is dumb. This is discourse. Okay. It's two guys in a bar talking about this. And I like your idea, right? And I think that there has to be more accountability for breakers, because they are our we can't really say this, but they are our hobbies blackjack dealers. I like your comparison. They're the roulette spinners. They're the Plinko that you now see all over Instagram. That is the closest thing to what they are. They are the dealers in gambling. They're the dealers in the casinos for the hobby. And
neither good nor bad. They're agnostic. They help us receive.
They're dealing the cards out. I get it.
And then the best dealers are the ones that intertwine a little personality. We've all been to a casino and we're like, I really want to sit at this guy's table. I feel lucky.
Choice to go to a lot of different casinos and play a lot of different types of games. And I understand there's a lot of different breakers is what you're saying, right? And it's a state can choose who gets those casino licenses and gaming licenses. And are we really going to have one brand decide who gets licensed and who has the ability to deal the blackjack? Is that really where we're going?
It's so semantic, because hypothetically, we say that one brand, but it's not even a brand. We create a board of directors. It's 11 heads of this industry, and they get to vote on the standards that you need to be an accredited breaker.
So is Upper Deck, Panini, and Fanatics all part of the deciding committee?
If I could be honest?
Yeah.
I would love for the community to decide. I don't think I have to be the one that decides.
Well, you're the only one here. You know, we are this no taxation without representation.
I would do a census. I would do who I would poll the community before, not as a vote, but as a feeler.
So let's just say the community spoke and they said, yes, the best way to do this is that this rules that you're coming up with, the uniform code of breaking standards for the hobby, right. It should be meted out by a group of hobby companies that are supplying the product, whether it be distributors, Fanatics, Topps, Panini, Upper Deck, Leaf, you know, the whole
thing. Ideally, it would be competitive at the table too, to avoid conflict of interest.
So then that becomes my next question, right? Does entrance into this and the ability to have an input by those companies, does it also come with what I'm going to call a non-compete clause? Does it also come with a non-monopolistic tone? If we're all going to work together for the good of the hobby, and we're all going to sit there and say, all right, we're going to come up with these rules for credibility to make sure that the end user is taken care of and not screwed over, and that only breakers who follow these uniform codes of breaking standards are going to be able to break, we can't force them to only purchase product from us in order to break. They can't just... Panini can't go to a breaker and say, you can get Panini product as long as you only break Panini product. You can't also break Tops. Is that fair? Your seat at the table gets you that. Or you think we should...
The seat at the table is not business-driven. It's ethics-driven, Cage. And I think it's not that we have to leave
business... So that's the problem. So it's not business and ethics, right? So when you're putting Fanatics and these companies at that table, the ones coming up with the rules, that's the difference between the gambling that you're talking about, between the state body, right? The state is not a private business that is actually providing the good being distributed. They take a rake, right? They take a percentage, they take a fee, they take a gambling, they take a license, right? They take a fee, but they're not actually going to profit based on the distribution of the product. That's a huge difference. And I think there has to be some form of, agnostic behavior from the businesses if they're also going to be meeting out the guidelines and the rules for how people break. Otherwise, you run into some real problems.
Conflict of interest. But let me come at it from a different standpoint. I'm not saying that this has to be done. What I am saying is, in a similar industry, the gambling industry with blackjack, roulette, if you guys remember, this was only allowed in New Jersey on like Indian stomping grounds, I believe, Native American, if you prefer that, and Vegas. And then now it's in every state.
Sovereign territory.
I'm saying that if we don't go that route, it's always going to be the wild, wild west. And we're going to have retail king situations over and over and over again, because the person's incentive, this guy was hired a week ago, Cage. Mm-hmm. But if you really think about it, what is the interview process like? It's just conversation. There's no background.
Of course.
What are they so it's just going to keep happening, because you get hired and your incentive is, I could steal a $500 card. I have nothing to lose. If I get fired, I go get another job, get another breaking job.
Let me ask you something. Okay, so the breakers. But the breakers are going to get fired and they're going to probably be blacklisted anyway. And, you know, here's my question, right? Do you think that having those guidelines in the gambling world prevents this from happening? You don't think there's underhandedness from people who are licensed? Yeah, there are different types of licenses, by the way. And I actually just watched a special today about a roulette guy, someone who tried to be a poker dealer, was licensed for poker, but then was given a position doing the virtual roulette, which has a different licensing and like didn't mm-hmm. license require it. He noticed that when he did the roulette, he actually was spinning the roulette wheel, but it was like a virtual.
There would be a delay, like, right?
There was a 3-second delay, and he was actually able to, in that 3-second delay, take the ball and move it. And
put it in absurd.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it eliminates it, but I think it's it creates another hurdle, right? It creates another hurdle for the bad actors to have to jump over.
Can I tell you what it does?
Sure.
You ready? Why do you put a guarantee on a box?
Did you have it put shit in a box? I think you've said this before. It's annoying. I sort of think you Pavlov me.
Yeah, but it's true. People put a guarantee on a box because it makes them feel all warm and fuzzy, and the guarantee fairy might come that night. But how do we know the guarantee fairy is not sniffing glue? How do we not know she's some crazy kid stealer? How do we know? They put a guarantee on a box because they just sold you a guaranteed piece of shit. You want me to take a dump in a box? That's fine. Rather, you just buy a quality product. And I think that's really what the thing is. Why in the hell should we spend 20 minutes of podcast time saying that the bad actors are okay? The way to get rid of them is to come up with a uniform code of breaking standards that Fanatics and Panini. How about this? Guys, Don't be a scumbag.
What does that mean?
That's a hard
thing. That's how it works.
Let's blame first where the blame belongs. Don't be a dick.
Don't murder people.
Don't steal.
Oh, that's there's always a percentage of people who do it.
Well, then what difference does it make when you have the rules?
Are you serious?
I am very serious.
It's called disincentives. Are
you? I understand. But what's the disincentive? What's the disincentive here?
In the Middle East, if you steal, you get your hand cut off.
Talk about that. Okay, so guys, we have it. 20 minutes in, we have finally figured it out. Andrew's uniform code of breaking conduct is going to you. If you say you're not going to see the DT, nobody's going to see the DT. Hands chopped.
So look at this. I'll break it for you guys. I got a puppy. I've been watching a ton of puppy training videos, and one of them is labeling behavior. And I gave an example of punishment in the Middle East. Cage labeled Andrew as proposing.
That's amazing.
I think the retail king should cut off the hand, finger, the left hand. Left hand. You only get two chances. You want 10 chances to steal downtowns?
10 chances. 10 chances. 10 DTs.
In your society, it would be run amok. It would be Los Angeles. Cage is running Los Angeles. Are you having this?
Yeah. Los Angeles. No, I mean, the point I'm making, of course you need both. It's, come on, guys, be better. You know what I mean? And I know we can. I know that's pie in the sky. But, I mean, can't we start there? Can we start, like, you're screwing yourself over. These companies are screwing themselves over. And at base, we should want to not have this out there. You know, to get more people in here, to get more people to break, to get more people to buy, to get more people in the hobby, we shouldn't have stories out there like this. We shouldn't have who's stealing cards from who and who's committing crimes, and that we need to go out and have, you know, a uniform code of breaker ethics, because if we don't have that, then the new guy who's coming in to break for $100, he's going to lose because the deck is stacked against them. It's all fixed. It's all rigged. And why bother coming into this hobby? I'm not saying you're wrong, pal.
One of you guys content creators, here's a brilliant idea. You know, dude with the sign? Mm-hmm. Go to these shows and start taking photos with a sign of hobby ideas. You'll go absolutely crazy. Collector with a sign. There you hobby go. Ideas. I might do that, actually.
What are you going to put on the sign?
Standard code of ethics for breakers. Duh. I just talked about it for 23 minutes. I'm putting you on the hot seat. And I know you're going to get a lot of hate mail because actually I've seen a lot of fan mail from this person. At one point, he wanted to be like you. I'm going to ask you.
Uh-oh.
With the rise of memorabilia.
Are you talking about you?
I do like you a lot. With the rise of memorabilia, right? And the lack of standardization in that space. Mm-hmm. Do you think it helps, hurts, complements, takes away from the hobby, from the general card collecting space? And I ask that because, yes, for a long time, people collected memorabilia. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a very much an emerging sector. I don't even know. They're making a movie. I don't know if you saw this. Adam Sandler is making a movie about literally game war memorabilia and that industry. Any thoughts about that at all?
I think it's a completely different hobby. Honestly, I do. I think it's a completely different thing. Your emerging industry part is an interesting thing, right? Because it's funny. We had a cousin come over last week to watch my daughter's show. And, you know, he's retired and he's a huge football guy. Love football, you know, Giants, Eagles, Niners, like love the 80s rivalries and stuff like that. And he bought a house down in Florida and he's become obsessed with buying 8x10s that are autographed by football players and has a whole room, walls up, Montana. And, you know, he's got the wide receiver section and the, you know, the running back section with, you know, Jerome Bettis and all these guys, right? And loves it. No intention to sell. No, like, I'm not buying this. He buys them. They're the same. Someone gave him an 11x14. He can't put it up. It's like, it doesn't fit the 8x10 with the white background and the black frame. Like, it's very, like, you know, OCD, right? But loves it and is buying it for that. Now, I know that's not what you're talking about, the game used, but it fits more into the memorabilia. I believe that segment, that's where it was. I believe it was people who had an experience, right? They went to a game with their dad or their family and they saw Duke Snyder play. So they wanted to get a Duke Snyder autographed ball. Maybe they really went crazy and got a bat or a glove. they had a poster.
They came to the Chantilly show, probably stood in line to get it signed.
Yeah. And then next step, yes, maybe they went and they met their hero. And the thing that they got was not a buy and sell type of item. It was something they got because they were meeting their childhood hero. They were meeting someone that they watched play a game. They wanted to have a 30-second interaction with them and say, oh man, that catch you had, you know, I want to bet on that. Or, oh man, that really, I lost my house. You know, whatever it is. Like, you know, it depends on who we're talking about.
I would say, right? This is a ticket stub from a game I was at with my dad.
People save the ticket stub, right? Oh, I met Patrick Ewing. I was there when they put your jersey up in the rafters. Can you sign my ticket for the event? Like that, I believe, was memorabilia. And by the way, I believe a lot of our hobby was that for a very long time. All right. It was, hey, I got to meet Don Mattingly and show him my 1984 Donruss rookie card. This was a card that I collected as a kid. I wasn't able to buy. I was able to buy it now in really nice condition. And I get to show it to
my Hey, Don, baseball is going to be dead in 20 years. Thoughts? Yep.
He actually said you weren't that crazy, but he also said we got some great rules coming up that are going to prevent that. But you understand what I'm saying. The hobby has become a big business. It just, there's no other way to say it, right? With Fanatics in, with all the dealers in, with the breaking in, with all that other craziness, right? This is all, for the most part, a new phenomenon. And talking about what you're talking about, a new segment, you know, an emerging segment, right? That's because people are trying to compare memorabilia as kind of like the next frontier of what we saw in the hobby. It's like, oh, wow, you can prospect in the hobby, not just with Bowman cards, but with anything. You can buy at Dallas and sell in Chicago. You can buy in the beginning of the year and sell. Buy, sell like a commodity, like a stock.
You could buy a Trae Young rookie game-worn jersey, and if he has a monumental career, why buy his rookie card that has a pop 15,000?
People are talking about memorabilia now in a way that I don't think they ever really talked about it before, as this asset class, as this emerging thing, where photo matching. And I mean, it's an interesting thing to watch. I think it's a very different hobby. I think that they are being kind of, you know, combined now, because I honestly believe a lot of the same people that were in the hobby or watched the hobby also are in this new emerging class, right? And they're watching it and hoping that it develops into an asset class. I've never had that kind of, wow, the connection to, you know, to the sporting goods, you know? I mean, Andre the Giant's jockstrap, it just never did it for me, you know? That said, I can see the allure of it. We should do an entire episode on the question that you didn't give me really any chance to. It was one of the best questions you've ever had. I've been thinking about it since.
And then I cut you off.
The 10 items that there was no money. As a matter of fact, we should give a little advance notice to a couple of listeners, maybe some NFT holders, and invite them on to give their opinion of, like, money is no issue. What is it going to be? Because I've had conversations with people after that where ideas of what they would buy, and it was things I would never even think about. One of my friends sent me, hey, how about this? And it was a Honus Wagner card. And I'm like, yeah, but that's not memorabilia. That's the Honus Wagner. He goes, no. I want the jersey he was wearing in that card.
That's kind of cool.
Didn't even think about that, right?
Like, it's an exercise that builds on itself type of thing.
Yeah, it's one of those fun things. And it's like, wow, you know, and one, like, one guy told me, I want Billy Ripken's double F bat, not the card. I want the bat with the F word on the knob. Like, I want that.
I want the parental test to prove that Cal Ripken's not his dad. I still don't believe that shit. I don't know that you guys do either.
They're like the same age.
So in sales, I always learn a confused mind doesn't buy. Confused mind doesn't buy. Probably beat this into our heads. A confused mind doesn't buy. And I'll tell you, like, in today's card collecting community, supply and demand is a big deal. And what Card Ladder's done, what PSA has done with population reports and understanding supply, it's really hard to translate that to memorabilia.
A lot more
with no standardization.
A lot more creative storytelling, right? Creative pricing, a lot more of that. And, you know, normally the story is being told by somebody who owns something already.
I wanted to do a game one series for you guys, because I think what's cool, people think about, like, everyone has a podcast. I don't know what the podcast can become, but I know what it's already given us. And I think it's relationships and knowledge. The Game Worn community is very close to the chest right now. I don't think they do a lot of interviews. And I understand why. They're still like being emerging, so to speak, flourishing, blossoming.
Yeah. Thriving. It's fair. And I mean, listen, because people like me, whenever somebody tries to sell something, it's like, oh, look at that. It's a pump and dump. So I get it. I can understand why, you know, why they wouldn't be so quick to, you know, go out. But unfortunately, there is a lot of that in an emerging market because there's just not a lot of people holding the items, right? It's got to get into more people's hands. It's got to be something that expands out and becomes a little more mainstream, right? You know, you go to a card
show. Unique holders.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm the same. Type 1 photos. I think they're cool. There's definitely not a lot of unique Type 1 photo holders. And it has the same pitfalls that you're talking about. I have this cool Muhammad Ali Type 1 from his first fight. I have no idea how many of them there are. No clue. That makes it
difficult. You're slow moving, but you do expand your for someone like you, I don't think it necessarily has to be either or. I would say some of the Type 1 photos and the price tags on those might have been able to justify maybe a game worn. I think for you, it's more of a storage thing sometimes, honestly.
Yeah. Hell yeah. 100%.
Like, I'm not going to do with this things? Fresh Prince jersey in for my Honus Wagner game worn.
The Sandlot kids who we had on our podcast were at Crazy. Hofstra, right? At Hofstra, you could play catch with them. I came this close to bringing my Babe Ruth autographed baseball to play catch with them with an autograph. It was a, I don't know what it's worth. $20,000. I have no idea. Because that's what they played with in the movie and they lost the ball. I thought that would have been hilarious. I'm an idiot. Don't go by what I say or do. Forget about that. But you're right though. Like if I bought a Roberto Clemente bat, I'd probably take it to a batting cage and completely destroy the value of it. I mean, PWCC had game worn sneakers. Remember I said I was going to buy them and wear them to Mint. Like, what's the point?
Those are Chris Middleton sneakers that were $200. Let's just be clear.
Chris Middleton. Good memory.
Yeah.
Nice job.
Cage, got to give you a shout out. Hobby news segment. With a lot of our stuff, it starts out as a joke. I think jokes are what motivate Cage, if we could be honest. But I actually think you're onto something with that. So I hope you keep going.
You were there for the genesis of it. We were recording. And I'm like, hey, I got this idea. I think I'm going to do hobby news. You're like, you should do that. I don't think you really wanted me to do it. And then 10 minutes later, it was up.
I now know about the famous Blaise at Hot Yoga calling out Golden video.
Did you put it in the video?
Yeah.
What the hell is that? I have no idea. And I mean, Brian Gray, the beef jerky, that's a joke, everyone.
Did you see his fist? Yo, all you guys out there, because honestly, maybe I think our community is sort of like a private detective squad. Find out if this is true.
Uh-oh. So,
LeBron.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Asks guests and teammates to sign NDAs. So let me. This was leaked on a few podcasts. It's a rumor. I don't know if it's true. But think about this. LeBron's never had any negative public press or rumor come out about him. And then this comes out. He asks his teammates and guests at parties to sign NDAs.
With nearly 40 years as the most trusted resource for collectors, dating back to the first Beckett magazine in 1984, Beckett has been the brand that bridges generations of the hobby. We're happy to be partnering with Beckett and look forward to keeping you all updated on the big things happening at the company in 2023. Beckett, it's the name you know and the name you can trust.